For the Players, the pop culturist PlayStation podcast is fueled by The Man Shake. I lost 30 kilos in 10 months using this meal replacement shake. If you want to support the show and Max in my weight loss journey, or to even start your own, click the link in the description below. The Man Shake. Real blokes, real results.
For the Players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And this is For the Players, the pop culturist PlayStation podcast for 40 years of playing PlayStation, 8+ years in that games media combined. I want to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you would like to take part in future conversations with us, come and check out our socials. Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and Twitter. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join us as the conversation happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopcultures, where you can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you are watching us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, leave a comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. If you're listening to us on podcast service, be sure to leave a 5-star review or whatever the platform allows. If you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist, where you can buy shirts and other assorted shit with our logos on it. It's almost the last episode of the show of the year, Max. This is the penultimate one for 2021.
What a crazy year this year has been, though.
It has been a year. That is very, very true. We cannot argue that it has, in fact, been one of them. You might try to argue it, because it's been an interesting one. But yeah, no, it has certainly been a year.
It's just gone so quickly.
It really has. It's one of those things where it's like, oh, it's December now. I'm like, what? I don't believe you.
Yeah.
But apparently it's December. And that means the Christmas times. That means, you know, all the things are coming together for the year. And, you know, we start looking at holidays and our game of the years and stuff like that, for anyone that actually cares. You know, Puck in the chat, the pandemic is only 1 year, changed my mind. This has been the longest, this 18 months has been the longest decade in history. And it's exhausting. It's draining. It's been that. But how's the week been, man? What have you been up to?
Not much, actually, man. Mm-hmm. It is, yeah, not much. Not much at all. I don't even remember what happened this week. That's how uneventful this week has been for me. Basically what happened was, I'm off work as of this coming Thursday. So I'm already in holiday mode. I started my holiday mode countdown at the start of last week with, you know, a week and a bit to go. I'm like, I'm on holidays. This will, you know, and I kind of just autopiloted throughout the week. I have a feeling, because I honestly don't recall much.
Just blur and then you're at the time.
Pretty much. Yeah. What about you?
I've had an interesting week. I've actually gone off and done things for once. Like, it's for a while, like, I say that, like, I haven't gone to wrestling for the past, you know, 3 weeks. But, like, I've actually went and did some things. So, last night, so yesterday primarily where I did almost all the things. So, yesterday afternoon, I decided to just get in the car, drive to Melbourne with one thing in mind, with one plan. Now, we didn't talk about it last week on the show, in the news, but PlayStation Australia had created this initiative called PlayStation to Plate, where the idea is that there is a series of meals, a series of purchases, like food purchases, that are connected to some of their first-party releases. So there were three in total, two of them based in Sydney, one based here in Melbourne. In Sydney, they had a steak sandwich inspired from the steak sandwich that they talk about in the bar at the beginning of The Last of Us Part 2 with Ellie. I think it's Mandy's, I think the name is the bar. And the second being a bowl of pasta, which is what Nate and Elena were eating when they come at the start of the game, when Nate comes home from work and they, before they play Crash Bandicoot, munching on some pasta, hence the two inspired meals. But here in Melbourne, There has a location called Bistro Morgan up in Windsor, so just in the inner-ish suburbs of Melbourne. They had a Ratchet & Clank-themed dessert, a trifle, in fact, which was based around the side mission where you go have to collect honey from these weird alien-y plant thingings. So it's kind of taken the idea and they've ran with it and they've made it into a little trifle. So, excuse me while I choke on my breathing. So I decided to get to the car and like, fuck it, I can at least go to the one in Windsor. Done. So I drove over there, picked myself up a trifle, picked you up a trifle, Max. It's in your fridge currently. Oh, the car's in front of you. So it's cool. So it's this whole little thing with Deliveroo. So it comes in this Deliveroo bag that's all PlayStation themed. Comes with little trinkets like these Ratchet and Clank cards, which are awesome. There's also themed napkins, and it comes in a little like hexagon box because it's a jar. The food was absolutely lovely. Two, the place was really cool. And the whole idea is awesome. I still want that steak sandwich, but... because I've been having a look on the socials, and I've seen that some people... there's not a lot of coverage, actually, around PlayStation Play, which is bizarre, because people like eating, and people like novelty shit when they eat. I know I do. So, the Last of Us one comes with, like, a newspaper clipping that looks like it's from the, you know, the newspaper of that local town. And it comes with, like, a postcard and a receipt that looks like it's all from Mandy's Bar. I'm like, anyone in Sydney that listens to this show that went and has that, like, let me know. I'll buy it off you because I think there'll be some cool little trinkets to sort of have in the set and stuff, which would be awesome. But, it was this cool little random idea that I was like, you know what, this expires soon. I haven't seen much about it. I'm going to go do it. And I did. Now, Max, you haven't had yours yet.
I have not had mine yet. I totally forgot that I had it in the fridge, so that will be what I will be consuming after the show.
Yeah, so we'll get your post show thoughts. If anyone go to Twitter, twitter.com/popculturist, you'll be able to hear Max's trifle thoughts. No, but look, it's a great initiative. I wish they were available, like, sort of more than just the one in Melbourne or even in different states, like maybe one in Brizzy, one in Sydney, one in Melbourne, something like that. Because I know a lot of people in Brizzy that would have loved to get on something, you know, or at least find a venue that can do a couple of them. But it's still a great idea. It's just something fun, a little novelty thing to do. And it was a great way to spend my Saturday afternoon. So I'm pretty happy with that. It was great. I drove like an hour and a half to go get it because it's come a giant mark for PlayStation, I guess. And then I back-ended the evening by going and seeing a film. I went to the movies for the first time since Wonder Woman 1984, which was like before a bunch of lockdowns. I went and saw Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City with Popsy co-founder Dylan. That movie is... not good. It is not a good movie. What's up, bud?
We need help with Rhino.
Oh, what happened to Rhino?
Which one is meant for?
This is just like mad hot garbage, like everyone thought it was going to be.
I'm just doing a show, buddy. I'll help you in a minute, okay? Look, it wasn't hot garbage. Like, how do I explain this? There were parts of it, like, it's probably one of the most faithful adaptions of Resi. In the way, at least from an aesthetic point of view, like the characters kind of look like the characters, except for Leon Kennedy, I suppose, probably the one that he doesn't really look like white dude. Like he's this sort of Hispanic looking man, but he was all right. You know, like the woman that played Claire Redfield, she was the younger sister in Skins, first season of Skins, a couple of seasons of Skins. So she was okay. Jill Valentine was an African-American woman, which was an interesting choice, but she was great. I thought she did a good job. The person, Effie, thank you, Park. I couldn't think of the character's name. Where the guy that played Wesker, thank you, I was close. Yeah, Wesker, he was a cool character. He was cool, he's this giant unit of a man. And the bad guy, like the baddish guy, was just the guy that played... he was the blonde-haired dude in Arrow. So he was fine. But yeah, like I said, aesthetically...
blonde-haired dude in Arrow.
Yeah, not Stephen Amell, the one that played the bad guy. Not Ra's al Ghul, but maybe it was...
My thought instantly when you said that went to the wrestler. who's blonde and was a bad guy in Arrow. Cody, what's his name?
Cody Rhodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't Cody Rhodes.
Like, how do you not know that guy?
But yeah, so look, so it is, they've essentially taken a lot of the key points of 1 and 2, the video games, Resident Evil 1, Resident Evil 2, and kind of mushed them together. So you do get, they do go to the mansion, and they, like, it's aesthetically, it looks like the mansion, so it's kind of like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then they spend a lot of the time in Raccoon City, and they go to, like, the, you know, the RCPD. So, which is mad, because it kind of, like, they've done a reasonably good job of making it look like the Raccoon City Police Department, so I'm happy with that. The outfits kind of look on point. So they don't look as cosplay as the original, press photo shown. Like, ooh, that looks like just bad cosplay. Like,
I mean, did they spend 30 minutes going backwards and forth trying to find the club key? Because if they didn't, I don't think it was a faithful reenactment.
No, they did, because Dylan and I were chatting, we're like, if they don't find 4 separate fucking keys and can't unlock that door until later, then this is bullshit. But at some point, they do get given a set of keys, and they open a door, and it is the club key. And I'm like, hey, it's a small detail. Like, you didn't have to put that there, and I appreciate it. I appreciate it. You know, it's, yeah, like, it's fine. It was fine. Like, if you wanted the most faithful version of Resident Evil, you ain't getting it. You ain't getting it at all. But, like, there was enough cool shots, like, they did the parking garage under the police station, looked straight up out of the game. They even had the dog in there that was all shitty and angry and, like, full of virus. They even had, like, the truck driver at the start of 2, he's sitting there munging on a burger. They had that as well. But there were, even though there were these semi-faithful adaptions or semi-faithful nods or references, there were still... Like, there were still moments where they were just sitting there and, like, very clearly expositioning each other. Like, hey, Valentine, you're Valentine. Like, that's right, you know, you are Leon Kennedy, aren't you? I'm like, yes, that's right, this is Chris Redfield. Here are all these names you know. Remember the names you know? I did have a little bit of that, like, pandering to the people, or also sort of, you know, running down, like, you should know who these people are. But, like... There was relatively minimal on the CG. Like, only the back end of the movie had the CG, and that's when they created that big eye, the dude with the big eye on his shoulder, whose name I can never remember. But even then, that felt really flat. Like, oh, boss fight time, rocket launcher, and he's done in one go. I'm like, motherfucker, if this is anything like the game, you need, like, 6 rocket launcher shots at this dude. So, like, they build up to this bad dude, and then it kind of doesn't happen. You know, it just doesn't land the right way. Like, it's... First act is really slow. Second act is pretty good. Third act is near on non-existent.
Mm.
You know, it was a bit rough, but if anything, it made me realize that what Resident Evil needs is the same as what most video games adaptions need. They don't need movies. They need TV series. What we need is essentially 3 miniseries, right? Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City, or at least the first one is Resident Evil The Mansion, and it's 3 half-hour, 40-minute episodes, all essentially capturing Resident Evil 1, right?
After seeing Netflix's Arcane, like the League of Legends story, I just want all video game adaptions to be that. Like, they did that so well.
Yeah.
It baffles me how no one else has managed to do that, like, beforehand.
Yeah.
Like, even, like, Castlevania, fantastic. Animated series, Netflix. Arcane, fantastic animated series, Netflix.
Well, there is a Resident Evil Netflix thing coming in there.
Yeah, they announced the Resident Evil Netflix thing. I haven't seen it or if it's out yet. I don't recall.
But yeah, so the idea is, yeah, so you have 3 episodes that do The Mansion, and then you have 3 episodes that do Claire's story, 3 episodes that, you know, for Resident Evil 2, and then 1 that does Leon's story, and then 3 that does Jill's story, like, and that's Resident Evil 3, right? So it's I said 3-part, 4-part miniseries, right? Like, bang, 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 you break it into 3 episodes a piece, so you get what? You know, 3, 6, 9, 12 episodes. That's a pretty standard series size, and allows you to really hone in on it and deliver it properly. That's what should be done. That's why, like, the HBO and the Last of Us series is probably going to be pretty good, because they're at least breaking it down. They're allowing time to tell these stories. But then again, it's, you know, with a lot of backtracking and stuff that Resident Evil has, I don't know how easy it is to, like, you know, tell a story that reuses the same set over and over and over again. Like, from a production standpoint, that's cheap. That's cool. You know, like, is one episode of, you know, Claire and Leon's arc, or three episodes, is it them just wandering around the same building, you know, being chased by, you know, Mr. X or whatever? Don't know. But that is better. Because, like, even, like, I say that, like, as in Arcane, right? You know, it's like, well, it's just one character of League of Legends. League of Legends doesn't have enough to really deliver that, right? But guess it did.
I don't know. I mean, it's multiple characters. They pull a fair few characters, and there's, obviously, because it's an origin story, there are characters introduced to us that we've never, we don't know, we haven't seen before. And now those characters, or well, some of those characters are heading into League of Legends games. I know one of them's joining their auto battler next year.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be cool. And it's already been renewed for a second season, so it obviously performed well enough for them to...
performed better than Cowboy Bebop, so, like, which is already being canned.
Yeah, live adaptions are so weird from having an original animated series to live adapting.
So this is the same problem, and this is a problem that we'll get into when we talk about the Game Awards as well. It's almost like the games, even now, are still fighting for legitimacy. And whether that be like, well, we're not legitimate until we're a movie or a TV series. And I'm like, I don't know. I think games are pretty successful on their own. You don't have to go across. So hence why the live adaptions is always poor. Like, I don't know why they have to do it. But
I mean, for me, a lot of the issue is games are an interactive medium. And when I sit down to watch a movie, it's like, this is just so much better when I'm playing it.
Yeah, it's passive. Like, yeah,
as opposed to passively watching it, yeah.
It's weird, but we'll get more into that as we talk more about the Game Awards. But speaking of not being passively involved in something, we have been playing games this week, as we do pretty much in and every week. Max, you've played and completed a new game this week.
Yeah, so I rolled credits on Solar Ash last night. So I spoke about it a bit last week on the show. I'd played about an hour or so. So my final completion time was 4 hours, 18 minutes. But my save file is sitting at, I think it's 77% completed. So I've got some collectibles to go back and collect. And so as I mentioned last week, this game is essentially a 3D puzzle platformer with light combat mechanics. So if you're into platformers and you're kind of like, the combat doesn't really, I'm not really feeling it, this is definitely a game I would recommend. The combat is so light and few and far between that it's very chill. It is more puzzle platforming heavy. It's all about speed. This game would be fantastic for anyone who's a fan of speedrunning. You basically need to keep your momentum up at all times to complete most of the puzzles and platforming sections. So there's 6 different locales, and each have their own gimmicks. Some of them are reused. So, for instance, in one area, there are these porous mushrooms, essentially, with different colors. You hit those and you get essentially these bugs out of them. And then you can go find the corresponding spot. The bugs will infest another plant of their color and something will open, whether it be a door, it could be a vine that you can skate on to get to a new area. The game can sometimes get very... I got stuck a few times because the game is... You can go pretty much anywhere. And walls are not an obstacle because of the skate mechanic. You can kind of skate up vertical walls and the world will rotate so you're not vertical. So it'll rotate around you, so you're always oriented correctly and the world kind of just fits into place for you. So it can get kind of trippy. There are a lot of motion sickness areas if you're that way inclined, because you do have access to a grapple hook. You can zip around quite quickly.
I came and stood behind you for like 10 minutes while you were playing this, and I was like, damn, I'm gonna vomit.
The boss fights are fantastically balanced in the fact that the difficulty in the boss fight are the platforming sections. So essentially, when you're fighting one of the bosses, you have pinpoint locations that you get shown that you have to attack, and it's just they're just all one hit wonders. You just hit them once and you move on, and it extends the timer of which there are safe zones for you to stand on the boss. And you, the idea is you combo across the boss, because the bosses are quite large, as I mentioned last week, similar to that of Shadow of the Colossus.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just a fantastic puzzle platformer. It's a very short game. It's by the guys who did Hyperlight Drifter. For the life of me, I cannot think of the developer's name, so I apologize for that.
It'll come to me shortly.
It's a Annapurna published title. Yep. So it's a very easy recommend for someone who's looking for, you know, a smaller game, a shorter game. The story is absolutely fantastic. The basic premise is you're trying to save your planet from essentially a super black hole that's basically sucking in and destroying your planet. And you have to reestablish these conduit points to activate the machine to destroy this black hole. And the story goes to some very, very interesting places. But they're all super heavy spoilers, so I won't get into it. But yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. A very easy recommend for any puzzle platforming fan. And don't be too shy if you're not a huge fan of combat. The combat is super, super light and very, very easy.
Very nice. Very, very nice. Because yeah, like, as we said last week, you kind of hit me up and were like, hey, can I get Solar Ash? I'm like, sure, here you go. So thanks to our lovely Patreon supporters who allowed us to just get Max Solar Ash out of the blue. I was like, sure. Boop. But I'm so glad you really enjoyed it, because yeah, you were like, you saw the reviews are pretty good, but you were unsure, and then you just jumped in, and it's good to sort of have those moments where you're like, I don't know, and then you try it, and you go, yeah, no, that was fantastic.
Yeah, no, it was really, really good.
Oh, excuse me. But I am having that sort of like, at the moment, so I'm still chipping away at Death's Door. I'm about 6.5-7 hours deep into it at the moment. I've taken out 2 of the 3 big giant souls or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm still really, really enjoying it. Like, I think I discussed about it last week. So, like, one of the big... This is one of the contenders for, at least, you know, for many people's game of the year, especially from an independent space. And, like, part of me agrees with it, but part of me doesn't, in the way that, like, I'm really, really enjoying it from a gameplay perspective, and I'm having a good time with it. But, like, I guess there are other games for me that would just land better. Like, it certainly would make my list, potentially, depending on how big my list is, which we'll find out next week, by the way. But, yeah, like, it's still very, very good. But I don't think it's that good. That makes sense.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. Like, yeah, I'm still very much enjoying it. I've put a big hunk of time into it. And, yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with it. Hang on. Oh, what's up? What's up, bud? You need help? Oh, all right. Well, do you mean to fix the legs? Yeah. So my son, for his birthday, got a Rhinox, which is a transforming rhino, and he got a Cheetor as well. So it's ridiculous, because it's like, hey, here's this kid's toy. How do you put it together? And I don't know, because it's just complicated. It's just messy. Well, am I trying to make him into a robot or a...
Well, while you're doing that, I'll mention some housekeeping. So next week will be our last episode, and due to scheduling issues, we will be recording Friday evening. So we'll be doing like a Popsy After Dark potentially.
That's right. Yeah, that will be on Friday for next week, because yeah, a couple of different things going on next weekend that prevent us from going live on the Saturday or the Sunday even. So it's just... So we sort of just made the call. We'll do it on Friday. How Transformers? How?
Beast
will transform. Yeah, hang on. Has Dad worked it out? Nope, Dad almost broke it. All right, so.
Next minute,
very snap. All right, cool. I might have to come back to this, James, just so I can keep going on the show. I'll come back to that and I'll help you out. All right? Yeah. Other than that, I don't think I've played anything else. I think I've only played Death's Door this week. I've kind of just jumped in for a little bit here and there, and I went to the movies, and you know, I ate some trifle. Like, other than that, like, no, it's been a, you know, relatively gameish, quiet weekend. But yeah, I guess over the coming week will be us looking at next year, and sorry, our reflecting on our year in terms of what the releases are and where we see them fit. And then I'll announce it probably Tuesday for you guys of what our categories are, because we'd like to hear from you and what your games are, and whether you, from memory, it was like game of the year, Best game of not this year, in case you maybe you played a game that released previously, but you played it in 2021.
The Josh Award.
The Josh Award, because Josh only ever played old games. Then there was the Best Independent, and then there was Worst Game of the Year. But I, like, thankfully, at least in the last year, like you know, seeing as we have the luxury of choice when it comes to what we play and how we play it, very rarely do I find games that I'm not enjoying, that I didn't enjoy, because...
It's weird. I found my game of the year at the start of the year, and that hasn't changed.
Ooh, dun-dun-dun. I honestly, very similar to last year, I don't currently have an answer. And it won't be until I sit back and look at everything that I've played. Because even like last year, Last of Us 2 was great. I was just like, eh, nothing to me went, this is the game. You know what I mean? That's at least where I'm at. Anyway, that's enough of that. So hang on, in the chat, Da Killer Maghouse, have you guys tried the Matrix Awakens Unreal Engine 5 demo? No, I have not. I have it downloaded, ready to go. Like, we downloaded it, ready to go, and it was ideally to play it this morning, but both Max and I were meant to record, like, earlier, but we both kind of just slept in. So we're like, we'll do the show later. Yeah, sure, later.
For me, it was mainly playing Pokemon in bed, and I didn't want to get up.
Yeah. My priorities were elsewhere for the morning, which was mostly just snoozing. But no, I haven't checked out, although I have seen a lot of screenshots and footage of it, and it looks brilliant. And I read this really cool thread about it on Twitter, and it was around the idea of the comparison between how video games work, between how movies are made, right? So for movies, the most easiest movie that you can make, now I can't credit the individual that had this Twitter thread because the life may not remember who they were. The idea is, with movies, the easiest movie that you can make is two people talking, just in close-up shots, right? Super easy. But in games, that's the hardest thing to make, because faces are really hard to do, realistic faces are really hard to do, and having two people just talk to each other can be difficult. And that's where the uncanny valley comes in, right? If it's not done right. Where in film, a giant blockbuster, 100 cars exploding into each other and going off into space, very difficult, very expensive. Games, super piss easy. So in order to have a game, from my understanding, what the Matrix Awakens demo is, where it's really showing faces, it's really showing intricate details and all these sort of things. So it's kind of demonstrating like the actual massive potential of what the Unreal Engine 5 can deliver. And I wish I had played it before I'd done the show today, because like, fuck. Like when I read that thread this morning, I'm like, damn, I should play that. And then I kind of snoozed. But... yeah, from all accounts, it's kind of showing literally what the future of games could be.
Yeah.
And that's what has me excited. Like, I know a friend of the show, Buddy Watson, super stoked on it, super excited on it. Like, he's pretty hot on it from what he experienced. And I respect what he has to say. So I was like, cool, it's good enough for me, I suppose. But it is on the list. Anyways, before we get into the news, we have a section we call our Get Less Fat Update, where Max and I talk about our weight loss journey. So for those who don't know, the show is brought to you by, and I'm a ambassador for the Man Shake. It's a meal replacement shake made out of here in Australia, where I have lost 40 kilos over the last year and a half, I guess. Just shy of 2 years. Yeah, 18 months. 20 months, something like that. Yeah, I've lost about 40 kilos, or just over 40 kilos. So each and every week, Max and I come in, we talk about our week as it's been, how we've done, how we've fared, so in attempts to keep ourselves accountable. Now, Max, you lost like 15 kilos from memory, roundabout?
Yeah, I'm at 16 total lost, and this week, this was my get more fat week. I ate a crap load of pasta and potato and all the fun stuff. To the point where I also, it was a bad week for me this week. I kind of, like I said, I started my holiday mode last week and I was sticking.
Yeah, and you are 100% in holiday mode.
I'm 100% in holiday mode. It's very bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So as I think I talked about last week, so I hit my goal of the 40 kilos. So you know, I lost just under 30% of my body weight. Like I was like, hit it. I'm like, success. I've done my part. And now I just got to live free. No, like I'm still doing the shakes on the weekly and stuff like that. But like there is a bit of loose. I have kind of just done the, like I haven't weighed myself in the last 2 weeks. I just don't have access to scales at the moment. So I'm like, So like, I actually don't know what I weigh right now. It's very lucky that I've gained weight. I still feel the same, but maybe I've gained. I don't know. You know, so I don't really have an answer in terms of this week specifically. Like, ideally, I'd like to have a see where I'm at for next week. But you know, it's up in the air. It's been it's interesting. Like, it's been having being so like not restricted, because like I voluntarily restricted myself over the last X amount of time with the shakes. But it has been kind of liberating over the last week, like not looking at my weight, not looking at my weigh-ins, like not doing it and just kind of living, and then but being considerate in the idea of like, well, I'll have my shakes and, you know, for dinner I'll do this or I'll have that, you know. I'm not really putting the same level of thought into it, but I'm still very, it's weird, I say that, but I'm still very conscious of it too. Like, there's still that voice in the back of my head that's going, you're doing it wrong. Like I said, the irony of like, you know, body dysmorphia, I guess, where previously I was like, you know, I didn't give a shit, and now I give too much of a shit, and it's clashing in and of itself. Anyways, but if you want to start your weight, your own weight loss, you know, weight loss journey, or even just support this show, you can. There is a link in the description, bit.ly/FTPmanshake. Just by clicking the link, you don't have to buy anything. It helps support the show. Max. Now it's time to get into the section called Inform the Players. We tell you about what happened this week in PlayStation. I'm going to shut the door. Be right back and get started.
Well, let's kick things off. So Sony have made another acquisition. I believe it was yesterday or the day before at time of recording. Sony has acquired another studio, the Guns Up developer Valkyrie Entertainment. The team based in Seattle has worked as an outsourcing studio for much of its lifespan, lending a helping hand to the likes of God of War, Forza Motorsport, and titles out of Riot Games. Most recently, it was confirmed to be helping Santa Monica Studio with God of War Ragnarok. Herman Holst announced the acquisition on Twitter, stating, quote, "The studio will be making an invaluable contributions to key PlayStation Studio franchises. It sounds like Valkyrie Entertainment will continue to help other developers in the production of their games rather than focus on making its own experiences. Guns Up is their only game the studio has made by itself, which Sony helped publish." In a Business Wire post, Holst said, quote, "Valkyrie Entertainment is a highly adaptable and respected studio which has produced high-quality work on a range of platforms from console to PC and a variety of styles from action to games-as-a-service titles. Valkyrie's diverse capabilities will be welcomed by every team at PlayStation Studios as we continue to focus on delivering extraordinary gaming experiences."
So with this announcement, it sort of came out of the blue as well. We sort of woke up, checked Twitter, and we saw that this purchase had happened. To me, this is solidifying the business strategy that PlayStation are having, right? So it's no longer about buying games and trying to lock down studios or franchises, I guess, in the same way that Xbox have been. You know, gaming's for everyone except for when we buy the studios. Where PlayStation's approach is to build up and support their studios in a different way. And I believe that in the purchases of like Nixus, as well as now Valkyrie, like they are looking at ways to expand what they do or support what they already do in a different way. Like Valkyrie, it's very likely that we won't see games made by them. They will be a support studio. So rather than having to hire external studios, keep it all in-house, and they will, as you said, well, they're going to help God of War, and I imagine we'll see them across a stack of other releases over the coming years. And Nixus's entire business model, by the looks of it, is to help games go from console to PC. That is correct acquisition. It's the same as THQ Nordic, right? Even though they've purchased every fucker under the sun, that, you know, they, apart from just buying studios, they have also bought publishers, they have bought, you know, support studios, they have bought, you know, every marketers, every aspect of it, in order to best fill out their needs, to not be reliant on external parties.
Yeah.
And I think that is a much more sustainable and a much more like an ideal purchase strategy, right? Or an acquisition strategy. Because, like, you know, they're like, we're not seeing them buy Square Enix. We're not seeing them want to buy Take-Two or, you know, choke out the market. They're like, well, we have our market and we're going to better support it. So what we deliver is better. So rather than bolstering our first-party offerings or exclusive offerings with other stuff, let's build on what we have. And I believe that's what PlayStation have been doing this entire time. Like, if we look back at, you know, like Sucker Punch was a brand new studio, relatively, and they've brought them up to where they are now. Naughty Dog were in a similar space. Yes, they had some good titles under their belt, but they've been allowed to grow and do well. Saying that, Sony have shut down their fair share of studios as well, but I think Sony has changed a lot in their plan. Hey, what do you think about the purchase of Valkyrie?
Yeah, it makes sense. You know, we spoke about this with a few friends of the show, and they obviously, you know, hopefully it does eliminate the crunch that some studios do have. But as they mentioned, a lot of it is just, especially from the Sony side, it's only really Naughty Dog that you hear about having horrendous crunch. Everyone else kind of just does what they need to do,
yeah,
which is good. Having more support studios makes sense. And again, like you said, you know, it keeps it in-house. It means they don't have to outsource and pay other studios to help expand their market. It's not like they're tearing them away from making their own products if they've only made one game to begin with. Their tool set is obviously in the support studio side, so that makes sense. And yeah, it is good for their business model as opposed to outright buying IPs and developers and yeah, locking them behind more of those closed walls.
All right. Well, the only other big bit, and like, look, this week has been pretty quiet, mostly because everyone stayed hush for one particular reason, and that is the Game Awards. So, now, as the name of the episode suggests, there is a problem with the Game Awards, and we'll get to it, because I have a lot to say about it. But first, we'll get through some of the things. Apparently, this show is an award show, so let's touch upon some of the big awards that were won. The Game of the Year for 2021 is It Takes Two by Haze Light, Joseph Farris. It also won Family Game of the Year as well as Multiplayer Game of the Year. Best Game Direction / Art Direction and Art Direction, sorry, went to Deathloop, yep, which interesting choice. And the Best Action Game went to Returnal. So they're the big ones, the most important ones. Max, where do you sit on these?
So It Takes Two, totally deserving of Game of the Year. I didn't think it was going to win because it's such a... Because of the way the title works, because it's one of those you have to play it cooperatively, it does limit a lot of people from playing it. But the game is so whimsical and fun and lighthearted despite having this super heavy story. I think both of us spoke about it earlier this year when it came out. You know, the game, the story is based on, you know, a couple going through a divorce and how the child deals with that. It is, you know, it's a super heavy topic. I was lucky enough, I played this game with my wife, and we had a really, really, you know, I don't want to use the word fun, but it was such a fun time spending that time together and having this experience with her.
Mm-hmm.
It's very well deserved. You know, from a gameplay standpoint, it's super well balanced for a game that you have to play with two players. Each individual feels like they have their own role to play, and they're just as useful as the other person. There's not one person carrying the other. That the whole game revolves around this teamwork and trying to, you know, overcome the issues of trying to be two singular people and to come together and you know, realize that it's teamwork that gets the job done, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it had such a fun art style. You know, you were these shrunken down claymation dolls, and I think one was like a essentially like a sack doll as well. It was so fantastic, and it's really good to see a smaller title win Game of the Year when it was up against some, you know, pretty huge franchise.
Well, because, yeah, I've just pulled up the list as well. So the Game of the Year nominees were Deathloop, It Takes Two, Metroid Dread, Psychonauts 2, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, and Resident Evil Village. So looking at these lists, and we talked about this last week as well, like, I didn't think Deathloop was all that good. I liked its premise, but it seemed quite shallow once you started to play it. It, you know, Metroid Dread I haven't played. Psychonauts 2 seemed really, really cool. Ratchet & Clank was very, very good. However, I don't think it was anything stellar. Resident Evil Village was great, and I really did enjoy it, but it felt too disconnected and not cohesive enough to be a full Game of the Year contender. Where I agree with you, It Takes Two is unique. It's innovative. Like, it was a great story from the big hunk that I played. I never finished it, sadly, and I hope to go back to it over the break. Like it hit all these different beats, and it showed genuine change and genuine like difference within the gaming space. So I got no beat for that. I got no beat for that at all. I do believe that probably, you know, that is the correct winner when you look at the other ones. But, you know, we'll add a couple other there as well. Best Ongoing went to Final Fantasy 14, which makes sense because that game is doing so well that it can't even be open. Like, it's hard to play. Best Independent Game went to Kena Bridge of Spirits. So it beat out 12 Minutes, Death's Door, Inscription, and Loop Hero. The reason I want to bring up that one is because I do believe that Kena Bridge of Spirits is the best independent of the year, especially looking at this list as well. Like I said, to sort of reiterate my point about Death's Door before, I'm really, really enjoying playing Death's Door, but it didn't hit me the way Kena did. I think Kena is a tremendous game. Probably a near on perfect game. I really, really loved that game. It hit me emotionally. It hit me in a great gameplay level. Like, it is the clear winner of this year. So I'm glad it won there. It did also win Best Debut Indie as well. Best Narrative went to Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, which currently neither you nor I can comment on because we haven't played it, but fuck, it makes me want to. Best Art Direction went to Deathloop over Bridge of Spirit, over Kena, Psychonauts, Ratchet, and Artful Escape. A little bit shit on that one. I think Kena should have a better art direction than Deathloop because Deathloop was kind of nothing in terms of his art direction. I believe that is a bad choice. But there you go. Let's see. Best Performance went to Maggie Robertson as Lady D, Resident Evil Village. I don't think that was the best performance of the year, but the two of them were Deathloop. The other one was Giancarlo Esposito from Far Cry 6, as well as Erica Mori in Life is Strange. I think that was the power of boners that they got the win there, because I think Lady D just won for the memes primarily. Because her performance was good, but it wasn't groundbreaking. And I don't think any of those performances listed, were groundbreaking, which I think is a different challenge. Because I would argue that like this year has been a very difficult year and not been a very good year either for releases, if I'm being honest. Like, there's been no, like, you know, like, there's been no Red Dead. There's been no God of War. You know, like, games that were clearly fucking winners. So I think there's been a little bit of, not settling, because I think It Takes Two is by far the best of the lot, but there you go. But look, as I alluded to, the Game Awards aren't just about the awards. I don't even think they're about the awards at all. What they are about is all the announcements, because there's next year will be a bitch to judge. Next year will be a bitch to judge. It's gonna be shit because there's gonna be so many games, and that will be exciting. But yeah, so it's no longer about just the awards. It's actually about what shit they show off, because as I'll get to it in time, but the Game Awards is just a giant marketing machine. So here are some of the announcements. We'll break them down bit by bit. Max, jump in if you have anything interesting to say.
I'll preface this with this is the stuff. I think all of the stuff that was announced or can be safely assumed will be coming to PlayStation. There were more announcements than this, but as they do not pertain to PlayStation, I've left them out. So if you want to check out all of them, you'll have to Google.
Yeah, go to IGN or something. Yeah, go to a much better. Well, IGN isn't a better, but go to a better source than us. One of the first things to come out was a Star Wars title. It's called Star Wars Eclipse, and it's coming from Detroit Become Human's Quantic Dream. It is, quote, set during the High Republic era. Star Wars Eclipse is an intricately branching action-adventure game that can be experienced in many ways and puts the destinies of multiple player characters in your hands, created in collaboration between Quantic Dream and Lucasfilm. Now, there are some challenges with this game, Max, because Quantic Dream, on the record, fucking shithole of a studio, really gross people. Detroit was really good, though, and I kind of like a branching narrative story game in the Star Wars universe. Could have been made by anybody else. Yeah, probably could have, because it's a little bit bum because they're quite shit.
Look, I agree with you. Quantic Dream, have some big problems.
Big problems.
Yes, Detroit Become Human was great. Do I want that kind of Star Wars game? Fuck no.
What? What are you? Why no, do
the whole reason why the whole reason why I want to play Star Wars games is to fuck people up with my lightsaber. If it's a fucking walking simulator where I talk to people, I could not give two shits.
One of the best parts about Star Wars is characters.
Could not give two. I don't like Star Wars. I just could not give two shits about this game. Unless I can kill people with lightsabers, I don't care.
Then it's very clearly not for you, Max.
And then even then, I don't really care that much. I mean, what was the game that came out a couple of years ago that was basically Dark Souls
Jedi Fallen Order.
Fallen Order won me over because it was Dark Souls with lightsabers. It's the only reason why I played that game. It was good. I enjoyed
suck.
It. That's the only reason why I played it. Like, I honestly, I'm not a Star Wars guy, and I get that. And I guarantee you there's like thousands of dudes out there going, yes, this is the game I've always wanted for Star Wars. It's not for me. I think it's going to be shit.
You hard suck, by the way.
The game will probably be great, but I will think it's shit because it's not a game that I would want to play. It's 100% on me, and I'm happy to admit that. It's 100% on me, but it's not a game that I would want to play.
It looked good, but it was entirely a cinematic trailer, so like it looked fantastic.
It's the same thing I said before. If I'm playing a game, I want to be like fully immersed and interacting with it. I don't want a walking simulator where I pick some dialogue options every once in a while.
That's not a bad way to play a game. It's not a bad way to play a game.
I agree. I like, you know, the Walking Dead Telltale games. They were great, but it was an IP that I liked. I'm not a Star Wars guy. It's just not going to do anything for me. I hope that it's good for all the people out there that want it to be good, but it's not for me. Oof. Good luck to you.
Fuck. Alan Wake 2 got announced. It was a teaser trailer, and it's described. So they had fucking Max Payne come up. So the director of the studio of Remedy come up and talk about how this is now a true survival horror game, where the more was more of a psychological sort of thriller, where this is all survival horror. They show a little CG version of Alan Wake. He kind of looks like Jake Gyllenhaal and Bradley Cooper fucked, and that's cool. Like, obviously, I haven't finished the remaster yet. I know you have a mad heart on Alan Wake.
I'm super keen for this. I'm stoked that Remedy have, between, you know, Alan Wake, Control, and now Alan Wake 2, they've made this Alanverse.
Yeah.
And I'm all for it.
Yeah, the survival horror seems interesting. Like, I like that as a concept. Like, I enjoy, from the time that I did spend with Alan Wake, I did really enjoy myself. But like, yeah, it just didn't quite grab me. And I wondered whether the survival horrorness of it would do that. There is a Wonder Woman game coming. So it's a short teaser. So it's being made by Monolith, so the team behind Shadow of Mordor, Shadow of War. Quote, the single player open world action game will introduce an original story set in the DC universe and allows players to become Diana of Themyscira in the fight to unite her Amazon family and the humans from the modern world. It goes on to explain how the Nemesis system will allow players to, quote, forge deep connections with both enemies and allies as they progress from a heroic fighter into a proven leader. I dig this because I didn't even think about the Nemesis system until I read this, and I went, oh shit, yeah, that's right, Monolith fucking trademarked that bastard. So mm-hmm. There's no one else can use it. Like, I was excited when I saw Wonder Woman. I'm like, that's interesting. And then, of course, Monolith being part of the WB Studios branch checks out. It'll probably play very similar to Batman, I guess, because, you know, Shadow of Mordor played very similar to Batman as well, which is kind of cool. You know, depending on how they want to scope out the DC universe within this, like, are we going to see Atlanteans? Are we going to see, like, because, you know, there can be connections between the Atlanteans and the Amazons, or the people that live at Themyscira. Like, I'm kind of okay with it. It was very nothing in the way of, like, here's a shot of Wonder Woman. It's very similar to the Knights of the Old Republic remake, where they're like, here's a character. Is it in development? Probably. Like, it's way too early to really announce this. But, oh, sorry, we should also specify that Alan Wake 2 is coming out in 2023, but there was no date on Wonder Woman either.
Yeah.
Is Wonder Woman in your wheelhouse, Max?
Yeah, check it out. I enjoyed Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of Wardor, so Monolith. I'll check it out.
Apart from the microtransaction shit they did, like, it should be right. Asks, will there be a breakdown in a death match? Quote, why didn't you say my mummy's name? Well, you know, it's possible. I'm sure she has mum issues, very similar to Batman and Batman versus Superman. It's possible. Next up was Slitherhead, or was it Slitherhead or Slitherhead?
Slitherhead.
So they tricked us.
I mean, they didn't. You just saw the word Silent Hill and got excited.
Yeah, so I was...
You played yourself.
Yeah, so they were like, they said, from the mind of Silent Hill, Kerichiro Toyama, and went, fuck Silent Hill, woo! And they're like, and then a bunch of anime music kicked in. I'm like, aw.
Yeah, so he's made his own studio called Boku? Boku? Sure. Something like that. And they're doing Slitherhead, which basically seems like the new Silent Hill style, very survival, very horror, sorry. Looks cool. Was like a minute and a half.
Yeah, the music
very, very teasery. Didn't really give too much away. We got to see what I presume are the Slitherheads. They look terrifying.
They do.
Yeah, I'd be down for this if it's by the people that did Silent Hill. I would imagine it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, like I guess part of me has that excitement of like, oh shit, we're gonna see some more Silent Hill, because really that's what I want. That's what I need in my life. I want more Silent Hill, you know. Because even like going to the movies last night and watching Resi, I'm like, oh, maybe they should make a Silent Hill movie. I'm like, oh wait, they did and it was poo. You know, so it is a weird spot to be in, but oh, I've worked it out. Oh, sorry, the thigh swivel, that's the giveaway. The giveaway is the thighs. Sorry.
Next up we have Ark Raiders, which is a free-to-play co-op shooter. It looked kind of interesting. Again, another short trailer, didn't give too much away. Then we had Sonic Frontiers. It's what appears to be an open world. Sonic the game had some mad Breath of the Wild vibes. So, you know, maybe Sonic of the Wild is coming.
Yeah, I know. And speaking of Sonic, they also had a trailer for Sonic 2 where they showed off Knuckles and Tails as well.
Jim Carrey had and Dr. Robotnik had a new mustache.
Yeah, so like, because at the end of the first movie... Okay, hang on. While my son's here, he's a big fan of Sonic. Did you see the new Sonic trailer?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I saw Eggman.
You saw Eggman?
Yeah, but Sonic always calls him Dr. Robotnik, but he actually calls him Eggman.
There you go. That is like, that's the demographic of individual that want to see that movie, and he seems pretty stoked on it. So I guess well done to the team over at Sony Pictures. Yeah, so like, yeah, because at the end of the movie, you see him like in traditional Eggman attire, and they kind of real double down on that for this, which is cool. Next up did you mention Ark Raiders?
Yep.
Yeah, cool. We saw a little gameplay trailer for Horizon Forbidden West, which was cool, which I didn't expect. So I remember seeing the Gorilla logo and going, oh, but that game looks great. There's not much more I have to say. It's right in my wheelhouse, so... You know, I'm excited. But the next one was the one that got you the most probably keen, I presume.
I have not watched this yet. So there was a new story CG trailer for Elden Ring. It was no gameplay. It was just a full CG story trailer.
Yep.
I didn't see it.
Are you on Blackout?
No, I just haven't watched it. Next up was Forspoken, the new Square Enix title. So that got a new trailer with a launch date of the 24th of May, 2022. Mm-hmm. That game still looks absolutely fantastic. It's the game being written by Gary Widder, so it should be absolutely fantastic. We saw a new gameplay trailer for Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League.
So this was cool
because... That game kind of looked cool.
It's spot on, right? Like, there hasn't really...
It kind of looks cool.
There, like, really hasn't been a lot of gameplay shown about it. This is the first time we've really seen a lot of gameplay in action. And it... there has been not a lot. And it's like, it looks cool. It looks kind of, you know, kill a bunch of enemies, go to the spot, blah, 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 blah. It is... Because obviously it is a four-player, multiplayer experience. But, like, I dig it. I like the characters. Like, we saw the Flash in there as well. You know, and then...
Also Superman.
Yeah, and Superman was in there as well. Not that trailer, but he's in that game. You know, like, it's cool. Like I said, I'm really keen to check out Suicide Squad. They had a live-action actor come out and be Amanda Waller. So I popped a little bit for that. Because I was like, oh, no way, Amanda Waller.
And also, Hawkeye.
And I know Hawkeye's not in this game because that's a Marvel property. Next up was a story trailer for a Plague. No, Marvel as well. Next up was a Plague Tale Requiem. I kind of looked away because I knew it was going to have Mies in it, and I was like, no.
And now that it's on PS5, it's going to have even more Mies in it.
Yeah, it's going to have even more Mies. It's going to have high definition, high frame rate Mies.
Some more gameplay from Saints Row,
admittedly, I don't know how I feel about this new gameplay for Saints Row. Because the previous trailers, it looked as if they were going in a slightly different direction. They were going in a different direction, a bit more serious, which I know everyone had a problem with. But like in this gameplay trailer, it was like, oh, it's the Saints Row of old. It's explosions. It's silly. It's all these things. And I'm looking at it going, I was kind of hoping for a minor tone.
Why it got delayed till August.
Well, that's my concern.
They showed off the first trailers. Everyone's like, nah, it's not the Saints Row we want, guys. And they're like, oh, shit. We're going to add some more booms and shit into it. So we'll just delay it till August and we'll add some explosions and stuff.
Well, yeah, like, because I did have that thought process. I'm like, have they completely redesigned what the gameplay of this is? Because 8 months isn't enough to completely rebuild a game, right? Or they've just happened to pick the trailer and they just happen to pull the right parts of the gameplay to make it replicate.
I mean, that's probably the more logical.
Yeah.
More
or like, scenario. Or originally like the game was having that silliness, but they wanted to sell it a little bit differently. And then now they're like, oh, well we're going to have to go down this marketing path, I guess. Shane in the chat from Magikcast and Game on Cans has added, had no interest in this beforehand being a Suicide Squad, but the trailer reminded me why I love Rocksteady. Very keen. Can agree. Cannot fault that at all. But did Saints Row do it for you, Max?
Nah. But I'm not... Again, I don't have that love of the franchise.
Okay.
So as a new person, I don't think it's enough to bring me in.
That's all right. So next up was Steel Rising. It's a game set during the French Revolution in Paris, except Louis the Sixth has formed a mechanical army... 16. I forgot the X part. Louis the 16th has formed the mechanical army of steampunk soldiers. Is coming out in June, around June
22. Yeah.
Persona 4 Arena Ultimax. I don't fucking care.
It's a re-release of the PlayStation 3 title from 2013. And he's coming to PlayStation 4 next year in March.
See, what they need to... Look, I'm not a Persona guy, and we know this. But what they need to is bring Persona 4 Golden off the Vita onto consoles, because it's gone now. It's on PCs, but they need to put it on consoles.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more.
Next up was one of two Warhammer games. We saw Warhammer Vermintide, something to do with Vermintide, and then the other being Warhammer 40K Space Marine 2. The first one was on PS3 back in the day, which I kind of enjoyed at the time, but it's back for the second one. So, quote, unleash deadly abilities and an arsenal of devastating weaponry to obliterate the relentless tyrannid hordes. Hold at bay the horrors of the galaxy in epic battles on far-flung planets. Uncover dark secrets and bring back the everlasting night to prove your ultimate loyalty to humanity.
They brought out the actor who's playing the...
And he's holding a giant chainsword, which was kind of cool.
Space Marine, he comes out. And, it was kind of cool. Not a me game. I'm not a Warhammer guy.
Yeah, I liked Warhammer growing up. I don't like it so much now because I'm surrounded by it at work. But Space Marines are fun. The gameplay was fine on PS3, so I'd be keen to play it again. Go ahead. You too.
Yeah, I was going to say that the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is yet another horror franchise to get the asymmetrical makeover.
Cool.
Yeah. That was pretty much it. PUBG is free to play from the 12th of January for all those people who are still playing PUBG. I don't know if it's enough to bring new people on board.
I think it is.
I don't know.
Oh, I think it is because it's been one of the long. It is one of the original battle royale games.
They said it in their trailer. They're like, it's the original battle royale. Cool, but you know, I don't think. I mean, I haven't played it since it's launched, but I don't know how much it's changed compared to the likes of Fortnite, Warzone, all those other similar style games, I feel, are just doing it better now, and they are all free to play already.
Well, that's also true. Having not gone back since like 1.0, like, I'm in the same boat as you. I can't verify whether it's better, you know, or it's changed. But like, I quite liked PUBG when I played it. I really enjoyed the slower gameplay of it. Like, you know, you're being a bit more methodical, and like, because to me, I had a much more adrenaline filled experience in that idea of maybe not seeing someone until it shit gets intense. And I love that. Where like Fortnite's too much, too cartoony, too bright all at the same time. Like, bleh. Even though it's like Batman and like Kratos is in there, and so is Aloy. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Woods is in there now.
Yeah. You know, it's like, it's all these things that should tick my boxes, but I don't like it. But yeah, people, and as Puck in the chat, people want a free-to-play alternative to Fortnite. That's what Warzone is, but like, Warzone is only first person as well, where the advantage of, you know, the third person spin of PUBG is good. This one should have interested me. Rumbleverse. So it's a free-to-play battle royale brawler. It's very wrestling inspired. So it didn't do it for me.
Yeah, no, it didn't do it for me either.
Another
game that doesn't do it for Max, Star Trek Resurgence. This is a team compromised of Telltale Game veterans. As you'd expect, this will be less about action and more about decision making, as you influence the outcome of the story based upon the things you say and the judgment calls you make. There.
Yeah, look, I've always been
again, it's not for me, but I'm sure all the Trekkies out there who want that narrative driven game are like, finally, it's our time.
Yeah, I've always been about the war, not about the Trek. So, yeah, don't care.
Yeah. Babylon's Fall. I got a new trailer with a release date of March 3rd. This kind of interests me. It's one of those co-op looter brawlers. It seems all right. We'll see.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Among Us VR is coming, but with no release date, which is interesting. I think the fun of that game will, like, there'll be a lot of fun with it having it in VR. I'm pretty confident.
It did look pretty cool.
So next up was The Expanse. That was what I was just Googling. I'm like, isn't that a TV show? Which makes sense, because it says that it is. So The Expanse is a acclaimed sci-fi show. We'll be getting a prequel courtesy of the resurrected Telltale Games and Life is Strange True Colors developer Deck 9. It will serve as a prequel to the TV series and will boast the same kind of decision-based gameplay. It's pretty cool. Did you watch The Expanse?
No.
No? Oh.
It's on, isn't the Expanse an Apple TV Plus one? I don't know. Potentially. I lose track of what's on what bloody streaming service these days.
It's on Prime.
It's on Prime. Then no, I definitely haven't watched it.
Yeah. Next up was Evil West. No idea. Cuphead, The Delicious Last Course, which is the final DLC for Cuphead, coming on the 30th of June. Looks mad. The trailer was awesome. Next up was Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, where we saw the two voice actors whose name escapes me right now. Fuck, the dude from Arrested Development and the woman who was in... Oh, why am I brain farting so hard? I want to say Laura Bailey and Will... No, not Will Forte. Will Arnett.
It's Ashley Birch.
Ashley Birch. I fucking get Laura Bailey and Ashley Birch connected, mixed up all the time. Yeah, it is Will Arnett and Ashley Birch. Thank you. I got there in the end. Like, I'm not a smart man.
Thank you. Thank you, Park.
That's why Park is here, because Park will always give us the facts as we need them. I'm so keen for Tiny Tina's, by the way.
Yeah, me too. The DLC from Borderlands 2 that revolved around Tiny Tina was like my favorite piece of DLC in that game. It was absolutely fantastic, and to have a whole game based on that, perfect.
Well, we talked about it last week, so I've been playing the which you should grab, Max. $15. You and I should play it. You want to play it again?
But I own it. Can you play it with me if I'm playing it through Borderlands 2? Because I already own it.
I don't know. Like, I'll give you the $15 if you want to play it.
I mean, if we don't have to, it'd work better. Like, I you know.
But how do you play? But you play it.
I don't know. Is Borderlands 2 on PlayStation 4?
That was my question. Like, the Handsome Collection is, but does it have a DLC?
Yeah. I think so.
Puck, people in the chat, can Max and I play it without? Can I play the one-shot version, and can he play the DLC version? We need to find this out. It's very important. Finally, a game called Metal Hellsinger. It is a Doom-style first-person shooter built like a rhythm game with a soundtrack built upon a bunch of heavy metal vocalists. So we had Matt Heafy of Trivium sort of be the introduction to it. There's, there was mention of Ginger. There was mention of Lamb of God. There was mention of like a Dark Tranquility, like a bunch of, you know, real good guttural heavy metal singers. So it looks pretty cool. I might check it out. I mean, I'm in no major rush, but I might.
It's similar to that of, they reference beats per minute.
Yeah, BPM. Yeah, very similar. Yeah. Very, very similar. Oh. All right, so Max, now we can get into the discussion around what I believe is the biggest problem with the Game Awards. It's not a fucking award show. And this fucked me off. So we were watching it live. I was at work and you were at home and we're watching it with, you know, Paul, friends of the show, Paul James and Joel Grolton. Like, we're all in a group chat bullshitting. It was like
You mean I work up late and all you fucks are like, oh, Matt, you missed all the good stuff. Everything you predicted came true. I'm like, you guys are assholes.
Yeah. So we were watching, it was about 2.5 hours in and 3 awards had been given on camera. Like where someone got to walk up and read and say thank you. They announced a bunch of awards pre the show, and then Jeff Keighley would come out and go, all right, here's the next 4 categories. The nominees were, it's best action game. The winner is, here are the nominees. It's Returnal, I guess. Moving on. You know, I still look. Jeff Keighley has done something amazing in making the Game Awards seem like it should be something reputable within the gaming space, but it isn't. It shouldn't be. Because for the longest time, one of the biggest discussion pieces around the games industry and games coverage is that even games journalism and even an extension of what we do, I guess, content creation, influencer marketing, etc., are all extensions of PR. And I wouldn't argue that the Game Awards is that. It's either all about making you want to buy shit moving forward, Or it's wanting to resell things that have already come out and remind you that you should go buy them. Where if you look at the Oscars, if you look at the fucking BAFTAs, if you look at the Grammys, I don't know whether the Grammys are reputable, or the Tonys or whatever, right? It is literally a reflection of, like, let's look back at the people that have made shit, and everyone gets their time, everyone gets their moment, and the awards mean something. Because it's either two ways. Either Keighley just goes and makes his Summer Game Fest where he wants to jerk studios off and just show footage, or he has an award show. And if the idea is, oh, we can't make the award show successful without all the integrations, then you're doing it wrong, and then it shouldn't exist. I'm sorry. Because, like, I genuinely care about the awards. I want there to be correct reflection within the games industry of people that are doing well, studios that are doing well. And that's what the DICE Awards are for, right? That's what, you know, the BAFTAs are for. Like, you know, the Golden Joystick even, right? These are legitimate awards that mean something because they're not surrounded in capitalism. It's built on capitalism, which I have no problem with. But, like, there is a clear fundamental problem with these game awards. And I'm kind of annoyed at it, actually.
So would the problem be solved if he just changed it from the Game Awards to Jeff Keighley's big blowout?
Yeah, this is Jeff Keighley's end of the year big game showcase. That would be enough, right? And then you have the awards not...
It's Christmas Games Fest.
Yeah, it's the Chrissy Games Fest. That would be the correct way to go about it. But trying to wrap it in the legitimacy of an award and then not give awards out, and then when you do, just be so fucking flippant about it. And this is the other problem that I've noticed with, and I've mentioned this in times before, where Jeff Keighley, because he's too deep in it to be the host. You know how they have the Game Changer, right? Or not Game Changer, the fucking Influencer of the Year or whatever, right? That's what they need to do. Like, so you remember that the first year, the Greg Miller one? Have him come be a host. He's a fucking exceptional host. Because Jeff Keighley, for what I believe in him, in terms of his delivery, he is all about just moving on to the next announcement. So, like, there is no care. There is no like, I don't believe, like, for him, like, when he's reading out the awards and when who you, the winner you, is, it's just, it's him going, I need to get through to this to get to the next big thing. Like, it seems so blasé and there.
I mean, he does rush through things, but the things that works for 3 hours, can you imagine what would happen if they gave...
It's all 3 hours because it's fucking full of announcements. If you just did the awards, it wouldn't be 3 hours. We saw what happens. If you cut out all the announcements, somehow they would have got it to 45 fucking minutes, including ad breaks. Because they chose to not do them. They chose to not show the awards. They did all of them off camera, or they essentially just read an Excel spreadsheet out. That is the problem. If it's an award show, make it one. Make it reputable. Make it a point. Like, no one actually gives a fuck, really, from a development, well, presumably from a development standpoint, or even the community as a whole. No one takes the Game Awards seriously. But they should be. Why, like, you know, once again, like, it's this built-up system where, like, you know, games should be treated in the same art form that is movies, that is books, that is music. Then make it legitimate. Like, the Oscars isn't fucking jam-packed with upcoming trailers for the next fucking 3 Marvel movies, right? That doesn't happen because they are designed to be important. And, like, the problem is, like, oh, no one's watching the Oscars anymore. Okay, it's not for you. It's for the people that are in it. Because that's what it should be. Like, if you think about it, there are people that work in fucking security systems, right? They have yearly awards for the best people, the best company that did securities or whatever. You know? You have people like... You know, the marketing agencies have awards like, this is the best marketing agent of the year. It's not televised because no one fucking cares unless you're in the business.
But they have that already in the Dice Awards.
Yeah, and that's why either the Game Awards needs to fucking do it properly, transition itself to correctly what it is, or don't exist.
I don't think it shouldn't exist. It should. It definitely has a place. It just has to work out what its identity is, because it is a bit mismatched at the moment. You're right.
Like, I feel like I'm repeating myself. I've said something for years and years and years. And at least there's no fucking Sheik Hydro bot or whatever this year, right? And that's a positive. That's a big fucking plus. That's a big thumbs up. But like, I believe that the Game Awards is an extension of a bigger problem within the games industry right now, which is that essentially everything is even games journalism, even games coverage, shit, even in how we do it here, but just by the nature of the way the business runs, they are all extensions of marketing. They are all extensions of that PR machine. Which, don't get me wrong, I'm happy to engage in. I fucking drove 3 hours just to go take photos of a fucking trifle. I'm part of the problem. But I'm not fighting to make my Instagram the legitimate fucking game award, you know? And then to add on top of that, right? Because every fucking podcast ever, every channel ever are going to start having their game awards or their game of the year set. We're about to do ours next week, right? Right? Some days I think the fucking ones that we make or the ones that our friends make may be more legitimate than the actual Game Awards. Because I can tell you first, and the people that played it and the games that we pick, we mean it. There's no shameless plugging behind it. Like, we aren't making 1,000 tweets about how, hey, go vote for our Game Awards. This is what, you know, and tagging each individual company or each individual person with game or studio. That we're not doing that because that's not us. We do it for ourselves. And this is us telling you about the games that we care about, the things that we believe are important. I don't know. I feel like I lost myself in my rant, but it's a massive problem. 3 hours. Sorry, 2.5 hours, 3 awards. It's not an award show. Am I even in the right space, Max?
Yeah, I think so. Like I said, I think the majority of the issues, especially the issues that you've brought up, would be solved by him just changing the name of the production, and changing it to, like, that, you know, Killy's Holiday Spectacular or whatever.
I don't know
if they necessarily need another award show. Because like you mentioned, you know, the DICE Awards, the Golden Joystick, they have enough reputable awards for themselves as it is that are decided by the developers as opposed to essentially player's choice or by popular vote or anything like that. And I think they're the awards that matter to the developers.
Yeah, I mean, really. Like, yeah, they're the ones they care about more.
But they're going to get, you know, it's the people in the industry voting on the games that they've made or played throughout the year. And I think that is of a higher standard to either user reviews or outlets voting on their game of the year.
Yeah, and like, you know, you hear the argument, oh, the Game Awards just a popularity contest. But I don't mean to fucking alarm you. That's what it's supposed to be. So my argument isn't that it's being delivered wrong. That's like, oh, it's just a popularity contest. That's not where I'm getting at, because it fucking should be. That's how it works. That's how voting works. The most popular one wins. So whoever uses that as a criticism, get fucked. It's not a correct criticism, you know. But yeah, it needs to either rename, rebrand, reposition itself, or just essentially call it as I said, you know, Jeff Keighley's Winter Jerkfest with some awards in there. Shane in the chat. It goes, I like the awards. Reality is, we wouldn't have a high production show like this one without the sponsors and ads. That's also true. But then, if that's the case, why do it? We still have the DICE Awards for those that want something traditional and reputable. They get coverage, but not as much, which is part of the problem, I would add. A few years ago, we still had Stars of Jersey Shore presenting. It's improved so much, but still a bit to go. That is true. It is improving. But I believe that it's the system that it's built on, the structure that it's built on, is the problem. Not how they wrap it. It is the structure. No, adds that Stephen Fry was the host for awards for hosts of shows. All right. We got derailed there. Quick biddies, Max.
Quick biddies. Number one, first party PlayStation 5 upgrades are dumb.
They are dumb. So, and with
so this is in reference to the newly releasing Uncharted collection.
Yep. The Thieves.
So,
whatever. Yep.
So, for all of us who own it, because we have PS5s, we cannot get the upgrade. We have to buy the new version outright. For those of us who own the old versions outright, you can pay for the upgrade, but only for the games that you already own. Otherwise, you'll have to buy the new upgrade pack, or the new pack outright. Sony have also delisted the old pack, so you can't just buy the old pack and then pay the upgrade cost. That's gone. You have to just buy the new one outright. They did this with this month's PlayStation Plus games. You do not get the free upgrade to Mortal Shell on PS5. They did this a few months back when you did not get the free upgrade for Final Fantasy VII Remake. What are they doing? I don't understand. Why are they making it so difficult?
Money.
Yeah, I get the money, and that's fine. But they're still making it difficult.
Yeah, like, it's not as simple as, do you want the upgrade? It's $10.
But I mean, look at the ones
they
that
add
have
so free much. Upgrades. They add so much fluff to it.
But look at the ones that have free upgrades. Just because we were given the game for free for owning the for paying for the subscription service, why do we not still get that free upgrade? It is free. Why are we locked out from that?
This is the thing. I remember there being a time where I shat on Smart Delivery. I regret shitting on Smart Delivery.
Smart Delivery is fantastic.
It's fucking great. So, past Ryan, you're fucking wrong.
But it can't be developer-driven, because, as New puts in the chat, he would be curious if it is Sony or developer-driven. It can't be developer-driven, because they're the ones saying our upgrades are free.
It has to be
unless the developers are saying, hey, you're giving away our titles for free, therefore they're not entitled to a free upgrade. But that seems strange.
It does.
I don't know. Anyway, moving on. Rumor has it that the unannounced Splinter Cell game will be open world.
Why?
Why not?
Yeah, but like Splinter Cell, you know, like we're gonna you have to sneak across an entire open world to go sniper dude. Like, isn't that just Hitman?
It's just Ghost Recon now. That's what they're making. They're making Ghost Recon with the Splinter Cell dude.
Sam Fisher, fuck you. Fuck you, Ubisoft.
Speaking of fucking Ubisoft, Ubisoft are selling NFTs called Digits in a game that no one cares about. I think it's Breakpoint.
Yeah, it's
You can buy skins and other in-game items that are classified as NFTs. I believe they are doing a beta period for it in the upcoming months where you will get 3 free NFTs that show that you once owned this skin if you ever resell the skin, I guess. Good for them. NFTs are dumb.
Oh, man. Like, you and I were discussing the other day with the idea that, like, it feels like there's a bunch of old people in a boardroom like, what's hot right now? NFTs. How can we get NFTs into what we do? And they're like, hey, young person. Yeah, young intern. NFTs, how do they work? Use things you buy that really have no value. That's fucking perfect. That's exactly what we love to do here.
Oh, that is brilliant.
Cool. Let's market it. Done.
I love that. Yeah. Lastly, the PC requirements have been released for God of War, and you need a beefy boy to run that shit on Ultra.
Fuck, my PC is not good enough, but I really would love to play it on PC. Like, I want to see this full beauty.
I can run it at the recommended in 1080p.
Your PC is pretty tidy too.
And so that'll be fun.
Well,
I'll stick to playing it on PlayStation.
Yeah, I'll have to replay it on PS5, I guess, because there's no fucking way that I'm going to be able to play it otherwise.
Puck put in the chat about the NFTs. Didn't Ubisoft actually shelve that 2 days later when the entire internet shit on them? I don't know.
Probably.
Pussies. Probably. Hopefully.
Pussies. So here are the top 10 best-selling PlayStation 4 games for the week ending the 5th of December. Number 10, Battlefield 2042. Number 9, Grand Theft Auto 5. Number 8, Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales, which is now on PS4, which is awesome. Number 7, PlayStation hits God of War. Number 6, Cricket 22. Number 5, NBA 2K22. Number 4, Gran Turismo Sport. Number 3, Marvel Spider-Man. Number 2, Call of Duty Vanguard. And number 1 is EA FIFA 22. So no real big surprises there at all.
For upcoming titles this week, the place that I usually get my dates from, according to them, there are no PlayStation releases for the rest of the year.
Woohoo!
Which is clearly false, because that would be crazy.
Yeah.
There's probably some smaller titles.
Yeah, the only week the only time when nothing releases is between Christmas and New Year.
Yeah.
So this is a bit odd, but I'm sure there's something.
For those PC fans, though, Final Fantasy VII Remake comes on December 16th.
Is that Integrate or just Remake?
Yeah, Integrate. Yeah.
Nice.
Remake Integrate. Comes 16th via the Epic Game Store, I believe.
Yeah, it checks out.
I believe Epic have it.
Yeah. There you go. Well, I got a little
Other than that, play your backlog, people.
Yeah, do it. Shit's about to get gnarly. Like, use this break to play games that you should have already. Like, that's potentially my plan. I'm going to look at my console and be like, I should probably play a bunch of things. There's a big sale on right now. There's a Game Awards sale and an end of year sale. So there's a bunch of sales right now. So if there are other games you want in your backlog or you want to add to your backlog for some reason, you can go do that too. All right. Big thank you everyone for joining us once again. Next week will be our final episode of the week. We're recording on a Friday evening.
Check out socials for a more precise timing.
Yeah, so I'll be posting something probably on Monday afternoon in regards to our categories for our game of the year. We would love to hear what you guys have to say and want to throw in on, because I think that'll be awesome. So be all good times. Max, send us home.
Well, everyone, this PlayStation conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, especially next week, Game of the Year, final show of the year. I just threw myself off completely. Why did I do that? Check out the links below. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and
You went, backwards. Either way.
I went backwards.
But if you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/popcultureweek and watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and you can become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can. Tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you are on podcast service, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If you are on YouTube, be sure to give us a like, subscribe, leave a comment, and leave a comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. If you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopcultures, as well as our merchandise store, popcultures.com/shop, where you can buy shirts and other assorted shit with our logos on it. But until next week, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And that was For the Players.